Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Let the truth set you free.
You can't handle the truth.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
No. I am the father.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
What is that?
Hasta la vista, baby.
Hello and welcome back to the Creative Control Podcast. I'm your host, Kenan, and thank you for joining me on today's episode. Back after a long absence, we have Sasha in the house tonight. How are you doing, Sash?
Hey, people. All good. All good. Just
he's been a busy man with work.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's good to see you, man. It's good to have you on. So something you may have seen on our social medias, on our YouTube channel, if you haven't yet, but we're branching out a little bit in terms of what we are talking about. So originally we're the Creative Control movie podcast, but now we are Creative Control the Entertainment Podcast, because we're going to be talking about TV series, and we just dropped our first episode on professional wrestling, which I'm doing with Neil and some of our friends, Neil, who you know is a regular from the show. And we're talking about WWE, and we just did our first one. It's called Creative Control, The Squared Circle. And we're going to meet up. We're going to talk about pay-per-views, the ones just gone, review them. And we're going to book, as if we had Creative Control, the next pay-per-view ahead. So we've just booked the Elimination Chamber, which is due for this month of February. So if you're a fan of wrestling, make sure you jump over and check our other episode, which is called Creative Control, The Squared Circle, Episode 1, booking the Elimination Chamber. So again, it's available everywhere where you can get our normal podcasts. It's all part of the same channel. So you can get us on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods. Everywhere that does a podcast, we are there. All right. So today, as episode, we're actually just going to be having a movie chat. We haven't had a movie podcast in the last few weeks. Obviously, we did our podcast at the turn of year when we talked about the worst films and best films of 2023, and we talked about what was coming in 2024. But this is the first time we've actually sat down and talked about movies for a few weeks. So there's a lot to get through. So we're going to try and keep it quick and fast paced for you. And the first thing we're going to do is go through some movie reviews. We'll talk a little bit about the Golden Globes, and then we're going to move on to basically movie news and what we think and give our opinions on it. So let's just start going through some of these reviews. So these are the movies that I've seen since the turn of the year. I've been trying to keep a log of every movie I see this year, because I don't normally do that. So I've been using Letterboxd to track it, and so it's a good place to start. So, movie reviews. First one up I have is Maestro. It's a biographical romantic drama film that centers on the relationship between American composer Leonard Bernstein and his wife Felicia. It was directed by Bradley Cooper from a screenplay he wrote with Josh Singer. It was produced by Cooper as well, but also Martin Scorsese and Steven Spielberg and a few others. It stars Bradley Cooper and Carey Mulligan as the leads, who perform outstandingly. They're brilliant in this. I think it's a movie that you'll either like or you don't. It's very artistic in its approach. It's you know, because it's obviously based around a musical. It's got musical elements. It goes from black and white to color, but the performances in it are fantastic, and you can see why they've both been nominated in respective categories, the Golden Globes, and why Cooper got a nomination. Sasha, you seen Maestro?
Yeah, I saw Maestro a while back when it was first released. I
agree Netflix, with
you.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you, Ken. Carey Mulligan's kind of the standout for me in this film. Definitely. She was fantastic. And Bradley Cooper's probably pulling in like a Craig best, in my opinion here. I heard he didn't win the Golden Globes, right?
No, I don't think he won. There, don't think he won anything in the Golden Globes. No.
Oh, okay, but he got nominated though, right?
He did. Yep.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I didn't watch the Golden Globes, so I'm a little bit behind on everything. So, but no, when I saw it, I was just kind of like, okay, yeah, that looks like that's one for award season. But yeah, very well directed as well. I do believe he directed it himself.
Yeah, he did.
I understand that it was supposed to be directed by Steven Spielberg originally, but he decided to pass the project and move on, and graciously gave the project to Bradley Cooper and stayed on as a producer. And it's, to be honest, I don't know how Spielberg would have done any different. Definitely in the way it was shot. I don't see him doing the thing. Well, maybe I do, but I don't know. I don't know. It just didn't, you know what I mean? I don't think Spielberg would have been as good a fit as what Bradley Cooper brought out. And he's the master. It's difficult to say when you can't see it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for some reason, I'd imagine Spielberg probably would have made it like bigger in scope, you know, whereas he managed to really contain it and make it a personal story.
That's right.
And I'm only saying that because of the Fablemans last year. Fablemans by Spielberg was really good. And that would normally be someone's first movie, you know what I mean? Or first couple of movies kind of thing. But, you know, he had, you know, he had the wide lens. Do you know what I mean? And like, because he's got all the toys and stuff. So it feels a little bit more polished than somebody's first feature. And not saying that this is Bradley Cooper's first feature, but there were certain creative decisions in the movie that were just kind of like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Like the musical number, like, you know what I mean? So certain aspects of it. And also, I think that there were certain subject matters in the movie that I think Cooper did not shy away from the guy's life, with blessing from the guy's family. And I thought it was really good, really well acted, well performed, well written. So yeah, we'll see what it does for an Oscar circuit. But I'm so behind. I haven't seen any of the nominees. I've been watching older films.
I've been doing a little bit of that. I've been trying to balance watching some of the older stuff and the newer stuff. And that's absolutely right. I gave my show an 8 out of 10. I thought it was a really, really good movie. Well performed, like we said, well directed.
I'll give it a 9.
Give it a 9? Nice. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Cool. I've got a few 9s on this list, actually. So
We'll
come to those. Next up, we have Silent Night. So this is John Woo back in the director's chair. It was a great premise, but for me, just really poorly executed. The kind of lead character basically doesn't speak throughout the movie. I'm not going to go into any spoilers for this any of the movie reviews that we're doing now, because it gives you a chance to go check them out for yourselves. John Woo was a man in the 90s. You know, he brought us some, you know, classic films. But I think, you know, directors have come a long way since then, and they're doing it better now. And, Joel Kidman is fine, but the writing was pretty poor. There was just some character choices and character arcs which you just couldn't get on board with. And I think if they'd developed better relationships between Joel Kinnaman's husband character and his wife, it would have fed throughout the story better. But it is sort of like your typical revenge type movie. It's not complicated. But I understand the lead being silent, but pretty much every other character in this movie was silent as well. It's like there's very, very little dialogue. And I just thought that didn't need to happen. But hey, so for me, Silent Night was probably one of the worst films. It was in my worst films of the year, and I got a 2 out of 10. You seen that one, Sash?
No, not seen it.
No, cool. All right, move on. So then I saw Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. So Jason Momoa signed off the end of the DCEU as we know it. And for me, the DCEU pretty much drowns in Atlantis. It wasn't a great movie, but it wasn't a terrible movie. It was probably just slightly better than average. I scored it a 6 out of 10. It's very big on scale. And, you know, I appreciate that because it's shot underwater. It is Atlantis, you know, but everything is green screen. You know, you struggle to see kind of any practicality in this movie at all. And there's one where you can see it is a soundstage. There's an action set piece and you've got some bits going around a soundstage. But Aquaman's character just seems to have gotten weirder and wackier as we go through it, and he seems to be more bro Aquaman in this movie than ever before, and I just wasn't feeling that. And I think it was probably heavily edited, and I think obviously there's stuff about Amber Heard, you know, we very much know about the court case and everything that happened there, but you can see possibly how a lot of her stuff was edited out, because actually she was in it a lot more than I thought she'd be, because actually she's part of that storyline. But in terms of actual speaking parts, it's quite limited. A lot of it was actually just, you know, just with her effects wise and action pieces and stuff like that. But yeah,
I'll be honest.
It kind of goes out with a whimper, and I wasn't a fan of the first one either, but hey.
I'll be honest with you. I thought she was in the right amount of time that I expected her to be in, because
I thought she'd be in less, but
they said during the court case about 20 minutes, and that's kind of the amount that she got. In terms of,
I thought she'd kind of appear at the beginning and then kind of just drop off, like be kidnapped or caged up, but in threads throughout the movie.
Yeah, that court case kind of sport like a portion of the movie, because you had was it Walter Hamada? He took to, you know, he did a proper interview and stuff, and had to, you know, was forced to say parts of the movie in the case, because obviously she was trying to make out she had a much bigger role than what, you know, than what she has in the actual movie and stuff.
Yeah.
And their point of view was like, well, no, you didn't, because she was lying. You know, it was written that way for a reason, because they made it like a buddy comedy between
It's about him and his brother. The first relationship is about him and her, then it moves to him and his brother.
But I mean, you know what, the downfall of the DCEU, is that what it's called now? Is that the other thing with
so the DCEU is the one that's just finished, and then the new version, James Gunn's version, could be the DCU. So
whatever the hell. The
Elseworlds, you know, now.
You know what, the Zack Snyder stuff, whatever you want to call this midway stuff that isn't really him, but whatever. I actually kind of dug it. I thought it'd be worse than what I got. You see, you know when you predict Armageddon's
about expectations.
It was like, lower my expectations, let's go win, and then I watched it. I had a good time. I'd give it a 6.5. Okay, because I want to give it a 7.
More than me. Okay,
it's like it's like I want to give it a 7, but it's not a 7. I didn't hate it. I mean, if I wanted to nitpick, I'm sure I'd find something. Like, I swear, in the first one, they couldn't talk to people underwater unless they did something special.
They did
something.
The bubble stuff, didn't they?
They encapsulated
themselves in bubbles.
Yeah. So in this one, they just kind of like threw the rule book out, and they were just like, "No, blah blah blah. We could do whatever. We're fish in it, and like whatever." You know what I mean? I don't know where the extra gills came from, like Waterworld and shit, but you know, it is what it is. Like you said, like you said, I mean, like, it was all CGI. You know, if James Cameron did that film, they'd all be all under fucking water.
He'd actually
like Avatar, my man got them in fucking tanks and shit. And Kate Winslet holds the Guinness Book of Record for the longest time a human
like breath holding, isn't
breath.
It? Yeah.
So like, there's none of that going on in these films, but you know, it is what it is. But you know what? I enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. Same with The Flash, man. Say what you like. The Flash was terrible, but you know what? Like, the highlight for me was seeing Michael Keaton back, going, "Yo, where have you been?"
The Flash was entertaining, and you know. If you take all the special effects stuff out of it, it's not a bad movie, you know, sense. You know, it's not. It was decent. It was entertaining. So
I mean, you know, like, I'll go into a bigger conversation about this at some point, but like, I have thoughts on the DCU.
We'll probably do one about the whole DCU, like, and just say, like, look, let's take a look back. Yeah, post-mortem, exactly. Let's take a look at what happened and really dig deep. So, yeah. All right. So we'll move on. So the next thing I saw was a secret screening of Poor Things. This was fantastic. Really, really enjoyed
this. Poor Things.
Poor Things. So, yeah, Emma Stone, Mark Ruffalo, and William Dafoe. So Emma Stone was also a producer on this movie. And it's intoxicating, this movie. It's bizarre. It's, like, wonderfully charming. It's a tale about the evolution of Bella Baxter. And she's a young woman brought back to life by the scientist Dr. Goodwin Baxter, who is William Dafoe. So it's a little bit kind of Frankensteinish in a sense. But she kind of has the body of an adult, but the mind of a child. And she's trying to catch up with the world. And she's eager to learn. She's wanting to learn about the world and discover about herself and her body and her sexuality and all this kind of stuff. But you know, she's free from prejudice, and it's set in a very different world. The aesthetics of this movie were crazy. It's just beautifully shot, beautifully designed. It's not set kind of in the real world, you know, it's its own thing. Mark Ruffalo is so funny in this. He's really, really good. And I absolutely loved it. 9.5, but at the moment it's a 9 until I see a second viewing. But yeah, it's a 9 out of 10 for me on this. And just a forewarning, whether it's going to influence our watchers and listeners to whether they watch it or not, this is an adult movie. There's a lot of sex in this movie, and there's that's a premise throughout the movie. It's very much about sexuality. So either be warned or I enhance your intrigue, depending how you want to take it. Sasha, you haven't seen this yet?
No. But I've heard things from a work colleague that said it was really good and a must watch. So I was like,
yeah, oh. I think you'll definitely be around. You'll definitely be one of those around Oscar season. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Next up, we got Bottoms. So this was a sort of mainly female cast, high schoolers, girls wanting to lose their virginity. They're both gay and they want to lose their virginity.
There's a reboot of Bottom with Rick Mayall and Adrian Edmonton.
It's a very different show.
Because that was also a show about two uni students that want to lose their virginity.
That's true, like that. Actually. Yeah, and, it is. And I just kind of wonder. In that sense, yeah. It could be in that sense. Yeah. But yeah, no, look, it's a fun high school type movie. It's the humor in it is very up and down. I think that's what it struggles with. The actual premise in the story, but again, it's quite predictable. But some cute performances in it. For me, it was a 6.5 out of 10. But yeah, it was okay. The trailer sold it a lot funnier than I thought the movie actually was. But hey, you haven't seen it?
No.
All right, we'll move on. The next up we got is The Kitchen, which was on Netflix. So this is directors, you know, I apologize for any names I'm not getting any right. It's Kiwi Tavares. It's his first feature. It was also co-directed by Daniel Kaluuya, who I'm a big fan of as an actor, you know, Black Panther, Get Out, Nope. Kaluuya also co-wrote this film as well. It's set in like this dystopian London, and there's a big gap between the rich and the poor, and it's kind of stretched out to the limits. And all form of social housing has been like eradicated, only except for this place where it's called The Kitchen Remains, which is like this really basic humdrum housing, street markets, all this kind of stuff. And it's got Ian Wright in it. He's got a small part in it for football fans. But yeah, we meet this solitary Izzy. He's living there by necessity. And basically he lives in this program where after you die, they'll turn you into a tree with your ashes and stuff like that. And he meets a 12-year-old boy there whose mum passes away, and it's about their relationship and building, and it's them fighting the system that they find themselves in. It was a really good premise, but oh God, it was dull. I know Andreas was a big fan of this. He loved it, but I just thought it lacked emotion. I thought it was really badly paced. Couldn't connect with any of the characters. Yeah, just wasn't for me. I give it a 4 out of 10. There were some nice moments and concepts to it, but ultimately it fell very flat for me. Sasha, have you seen this?
What was the film called again?
The Kitchen on Netflix.
No, seen that.
I wouldn't bother adding to the bottom of your list. Next we've got Freelance. So this was on Amazon Prime. It's an action romp with John Cena from WWE fame. He's an ex-special forces operative who takes a job to provide security for a journalist as she interviews a dictator. But then there's a military coup and they have to go on the run. So it's like an action comedy. If you've seen The Lost City with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum, it's kind of in that vein. But it's quite enjoyable. John Cena was quite fun in it, and yeah, I gave it a 6 out of 10. So not one you've seen, Sash?
What, new films or
Freelance.
John Cena. No, not seen.
Cool.
It.
We'll crack on. Next up we have Self-Reliance. So I'm a big fan of Jake Johnson. He's the voice of Peter Parker in Into the Spider-Verse, and he's from New Girl. But he also wrote and directed this film. So I saw the trailer and I thought, you know what, this is a really good premise. And basically he plays his character Tommy, who hasn't got much going for him. He's kind of split from his girlfriend, or it might have been his wife, and but he's given the opportunity to participate in this life or death reality game show as part of the dark web. And it's basically, as long as he's not alone, he can't be killed. So as long as he's within sort of like touching distance of somebody else, he can't be killed. But otherwise it's an open, he has to survive, I think it's 30 days, and otherwise bounty hunters can kill him. So it's very much, you know, him, he's trying to convince his family to help him out. They don't believe him because of the premise of it. So it starts out like a really good idea, and a really fun concept, but then it doesn't seem to know where to take itself. It tries to be a little bit dramatic. It tries to be funny, and it just kind of goes all over the place. I expected a lot more from it, and even the trailer sold it a lot better than what the film turned out to be. Again, pacing issues, and just some creative choices just wasn't great. So again, this was a 4 out of 10 for me. I'll crack on, Sash, and if there's a film you've watched, then you can chime in. The next up we've got is The Iron Claw. So, this will wrestle with your emotions. The film is based on a true story of the inseparable Von Erich brothers. And they made history in the competitive world of professional wrestling, WWE or, you know, AEW, think of that. But obviously this is set back in, it starts off in the 60s with their dad and then moves on sort of like 70s and 80s. It charts the family's rise into pro wrestling. So the father, Jack Atkinson, he goes by the character name Fritz Von Erich. He's trying to make his way in professional wrestling, and he sets his sight on being the world heavyweight champion, but he retires from that, never achieving his goal. So all his sons, he wants them to follow in his footsteps. You've got you've got Kevin, played by Zac Efron. You've got David, Harris Dickinson, Kerry, who's played by Jeremy Allen White, who's from The Bear, who's fantastic, and Mike, who's Stanley Simmons, and they're all pursuing careers in professional wrestling. There is so much tragedy in this movie, in this family. Just, it's unbelievable. I knew some of it going into it, but yeah, you know, you got a domineering father wanting his kids to succeed, putting all the pressure on them, and they try to be these larger than life personalities and, you know, claim the fame. And the way it deals with wrestling in it, they make it look quite real, even though we know it's kind of scripted and played out. They make you feel like it's a real world that you're living in. But you don't need to be a wrestling fan to appreciate this film. You don't need to know anything about the history or the achievements of the Von Erichs going into it. It gives you all the info you need. But it's less about what happens in the ring, but the action and drama, it's all outside of the ring. It's about family, the bond between brothers, success and failure, and having, you know, having to live up to expectations and carrying burdens and all that kind of stuff. Zac Efron, best performance of his career by far, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, the way he has to shoulder the burdens of his father and the high expectations and witnessing all the family curse go around him is fantastic. Again, Jeremy Allen White is another standout in this. Really, really great. It's paced well, it's shot well, beautiful color palette. Just go see this. I think it's still out of the cinema now. But if not, you know, catch it when you can. Easily a 9 out of 10, maybe a 9.5 on second viewing, but fantastic film. I think it's coming out this weekend. I saw an advanced screening of it. So actually, it probably hasn't come out yet. So definitely go catch it. The next I saw was, I think this is a 2022 film, or it might be 23. It's Jerry and Marge Go Large. It stars Bryan Cranston, Annette Bening, and Rainn Wilson from The Office. It's based on a true story of a longtime married couple. Jerry, he's a factory worker. He's great with numbers. He ends up retiring. He doesn't know what to do with his life, and he starts playing crosswords and do Sudoku and all this kind of stuff, keeping his brain going. And he's in a cafe and he looks at the lottery, so the local state lotteries that they do, and he sees a flaw in their system, which allows him to be able to manipulate the numbers into increase his chances of winning. And so basically becomes a serial winner of winning the lottery. And basically he gets the whole town involved, and he actually creates like a business, and it's all legal, but he starts making all this money. But then you have these kids at Harvard who discover the same thing, and it's about these two competitors going out trying to get the winnings. It's all based on a true story. It's really charming, a lot of heart. I could watch Bryan Cranston in anything. He's fantastic. So yeah, that was a 7 out of 10. Really enjoyable. Then we got The Good Person. So Allison is a promising young woman with a thriving career. She's got a loving fiance, wonderful friends. However, her life takes a sudden turn when a tragedy bestows her, and it leaves her battling addiction to painkillers. But despite the difficult challenges in front of her, she finds solace and strength in an unexpected relationship with Daniel, who is the father-in-law of her would-be fiance. Zach Braff, probably known mostly from Scrubs, who's becoming a very accomplished director. He's done Garden State, which he wrote and directed, and he's done a number of TV episodes, including Ted Lasso and Shrinking. But he's come back. This is another film. Again, he's writing, directing. It's absolutely wonderful. It's full of drama and grief. Florence Pugh plays Allison, and seeing her struggles on screen, going from this wonderful future to addiction and her trying to rise back out of it, is great. She signs in every scene. She takes you through on an emotional journey. She's really, really captivating. Morgan Freeman, he's playing Daniel, the guy who helps her. And he's battling his own demons as well as trying to raise his teenage granddaughter. He's magnificent. It's been a long time since a really good Morgan Freeman performance, and he really delivers in this. There's so much to love about this film. It was out last year. Check it out. Again, another 9 out of 10 movie for me. And the last movie I'm going to talk about is The Beekeeper. It's your basic average revenge movie. A man with a past seeks revenge because something happened to someone close to him. But it's better than your average action movie. It's from the writer Kurt Wimmer, whose most recent work was Expendables 4. So that was pretty dire. Considering that, this is quite a massive step up. But it's directed by David Ayer. So it's nice to see him back in the fold. He directed Suicide Squad and a lot of other stuff before that. But yeah, it's kind of your better than average Jason Statham movie. So for me, it's like a 6.5 out of 10. So that's, yeah, that's a catch up on the movies I've seen. Sasha, have you got any interest in checking any of those out?
Not in the slightest.
No? Okay. If you're going to watch one, I would say go watch A Good Person. I think you'll really enjoy that. Really okay. Good.
I'm already a good person, so I don't think I need any tips. So
fair play. I'd see the argument. Okay, let's go on to some movie news. So obviously we had the Golden Globes at the start of the year. Oppenheimer was a big winner, so we're just going to go through the list, little talk about like maybe what we've seen, whether we think they're deserving. There's probably a lot of stuff on here I haven't seen yet, but they're on my to watch list. But best film for drama, we had Oppenheimer was the winner. Up against Anatomy of a Fall, which was a French movie, which is fantastic. It's one of my top 10 films of last year. You got Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Past Lives, and The Zone of Interest. I haven't seen Past Lives or The Zone of Interest. I've not seen either of those two. But out of those, Oppenheimer, I think it was kind of a shoo-in because of the scale and obviously the publicity he got. And I think it's kind of Nolan's time at the moment. But were you a fan of Oppenheimer, Sasha?
I was actually. I quite enjoyed it. Sure, obviously it was quite big in scope in terms of the way it was filmed, but then, you know, he's kind of earned those, you know, he's grinded and earned that big budget kind of thing, big budget spectacle kind of thing. I like the fact it brought people back to theaters.
Definitely.
But no, yeah, I thought it was very well directed. I thought it was really well made. Great performances all around. About time Cillian Murphy was a lead in something. And I'm glad that it was for a historical piece rather than, you know, a big budget kind of, you know what I mean?
So something else he's written, like Tenet or something like that.
Yeah. You know, because Cillian Murphy's a chameleon. He's a very good actor. And to be honest, he's actually my first pick for Bond. For James Bond. He might be a little bit too old now, I think, maybe. But then it depends what they're going for, really. So,
sure.
I mean, if, you know, so was Roger Moore. He was quite old. So, you know, who knows? But, I mean, separate subject, more focused on Oppenheimer. But, yeah, no, I thought it was very good. Good. And no, Downey was very versatile in it. And, good contender for best supporting. I hear buzz. He might, you know, that he's in the running for that, isn't he? Or
he is. He won a Golden Globe for this for best supporting.
Oh, okay. So it's just a case.
And I think he won the actors, like the writers' actors award as well. So he's won a couple for this.
So you've seen more films than me. Would you say that out of the people nominated for best supporting, do you think Downey should have got the Golden Globe, or do you feel there were better actors or better performances from other actors that were more deserving?
So let's have a look at the best supporting actor. Robert Downey Jr. Was there for best supporting, and he won that. He was up against William Dafoe for Poor Things.
Okay.
Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon. Ryan Gosling for Barbie. Charles Melton for May, December, which I don't understand. I thought that performance was terrible. And then Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. Okay. I think the only person that was close to him would have been Mark Ruffalo, because I think he's so good in Poor Things. But just Downey, I think, smashed it for this. And I think he definitely should. I think he should have won this. And I think he will win the Oscar.
Okay, so on to the Barbie nomination. Why is it even there?
So
I saw that movie. I didn't think it was a great... defining the performance of a lifetime from Gosling, I don't even think it should be in there. So that's just my opinion. People on the interweb say I'm wrong. I'm saying this as a Ryan Gosling fan. I've seen him phone in that a similar performance like that time and time again. So why is he nominated for that?
I don't know why he was particularly because it's best supporting actor drama. I don't know why he was in the drama. If he was in the musical or comedy, I could understand.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't consider Barbie a dramatic film. I think it's just because Ryan Gosling is different to what he would normally play. I suppose there's a lot more serious roles. But I don't get it. I don't get it. So, let me run through the others. We got best film, musical or comedy. We had Poor Things, which it was against Air, American Fiction, which I haven't seen yet, Barbie, The Holdovers, which was great, and May, December, which is horrible. I don't know why it's on, because it's not a musical and it's not a comedy. Very, very strange. But Poor Things is the winner. Yeah, it's either between that or The Holdovers. A very, very different movie. But Barbie is in the musical or comedy section. So why then an actor is in for a dramatic role? I have no idea. It's a mess. He's up for Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars, isn't he? Ryan Gosling. So who knows? But
what, performance?
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus.
We'll do a whole separate thing on the Oscars, believe me. Poor Things or The Holdovers for me, was up there. Best Director, Christopher Nolan. Bradley Cooper for Maestro. Greta Gerwig for Barbie. Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things. Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon. And Celine Song, Past Lives. I would say Christopher Nolan, from a directing point of view, is probably up there. But again, I think Bradley Cooper had a good shout, and the director of Poor Things had a good shout as well. I'm not sure Oppenheimer will clean up at the Oscars as much as it has at the Golden Globes, because I think it might go some more and more the arty type films like Poor Things, but we'll have to wait and see. Best Actress winner, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. We also had Annette Bening for Naiad, Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of a Fall, which personally I think was the best performance of last year. Then you got Greta Lee, Past Lives, Kerry Mulligan, Maestro, and Kaylee Spaney for Priscilla. So Lily Gladstone, I can understand it. It was a decent performance in Clear of the Flower Moon. It's very much a good win and nomination because of the culture behind her and her ancestry. But for me, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall wins it all day. Best Actor, Drama. Cillian Murphy, we mentioned, fantastic. We have Bradley Cooper, Maestro, Leonardo DiCaprio, Killers of the Flower Moon, Colman Domingo for Rustin, didn't see that. Barry Keoghan for Saltburn. Again, for me, it's not a best actor type of performance. And then Andrew Scott, All of Us Strangers, a movie I haven't seen yet.
So I've seen Saltburn, and that is a very good performance from him. He's quite the rising star because he's in a lot of things now. I remember when I first saw him, I was like, who the hell is this guy? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then he was in the Batman as the Joker. And
yeah,
I was
he's
like,
in Batman. Eh. He was in Eternals. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he was in, what was the Colin Farrell one last year?
Oh, Barry.
In Sherman.
Exactly that. He was brilliant in that.
He was good in that. So, like, but Saltburn, I thought, was a great movie. Was it an Oscar-winning performance out of stuff that I've seen him do before? That's what it is. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen him play that shtick, but maybe not to the extent of this, if that makes sense.
The Banshees of Inisherin.
That was a fantastic movie. Not because of him, because of Colin Farrell and the other guy. It is, you know what? It's not a bad performance, and it's a really good film. The standout of that film is the guy that got done for punching someone that lost out on Superman.
Yes.
Forgotten his name.
Jacob Elordi.
Jacob Elordi. Now, I've seen him in two films back to back now. I saw him in Saltburn, and then I saw him in, I was going to say Elvis, but I meant Priscilla.
Priscilla. Yeah.
So I saw Priscilla. Okay, I have seen something recently. Priscilla and the Boys in the Boat. There we go. I saw both.
Right. Of okay.
So, but yeah, he's a very good actor. He's mm-hmm. a very good actor, and he lost out on Superman. And that's you know right. what? I think he had the look for Superman.
Mm-hmm.
He probably could have done it. So mm-hmm. that kind of makes me think I really want to see David Corin sweat because, yes. yeah, I mean, if he's got it out from this guy, he must be good.
He must be nailing it, yeah.
You absolutely. Know what I mean? So
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, best actress. That went to Emma Stone for Poor Things. You had Fantasia Barrino for The Color Purple, Jennifer Lawrence, No Hard Feelings, Natalie Portman, May December. Again, don't know why it's a musical comedy. Alma Placidi, Fallen Leaves, and Margot Robbie, Barbie. Emma Stone, Poor Things, musical or comedy. Yes, absolutely. She should have won that. Best actor, musical or comedy, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. You had Nicolas Cage, Dream Scenario, who I think was fantastic. Timothy Chalamet, Wonka, Matt Damon in Air, who was also very good. Joaquin Phoenix for Beau is Afraid. And Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. So again, I haven't seen those last two films, but Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, yeah, I think that's fair. And I'd actually like him to win Best Actor, I think, overall. Okay. I think, yeah, you should definitely check The Holdovers out. It's a really great film, and I can see him winning the whole thing for Best Actor. Have you seen either The Holdovers? Have you seen Dream Scenario, Nicolas Cage?
No.
Oh, okay, watch that.
I've not seen that.
Best supporting actress was Davine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers, Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, Jodie Foster for Naiad, Julianne Moore for May December, and Rosamund Pike, Saltburn. She was very good, Rosamund Pike, I have to say. I thought she was very good in Saltburn. But Davine Joy Randolph for Holdovers, yeah, I think that's fair. Best supporting actor we've already talked about. And I'll just go through some of the other winners. So winners for best screenplay was Anatomy of a Fall. Again, really great movie. And yeah, more people need to see that. Best original score went to Oppenheimer. Best original song was What I Was Made For from Barbie. Peaches from the Super Mario Brothers was robbed, in my opinion. Best animated film was The Boy and the Heron. I haven't seen that. Have you seen that, Sash?
No, but it's on my list because it's a Studio Ghibli film. So,
yeah,
you know, I quite enjoy those. So, yeah,
yeah. Why not? Beat out Super Mario Brothers, Spider-Man, Elemental. So, okay. Yeah, that was that one. Best foreign language film, winner, Autonomy of a Fall. So, again, just showing how good that movie is. And then the Cinematic and Box Office Achievement Award went to Barbie, which... fair enough, is the biggest grossing film of last
year. Is that a new?
Yeah, that's their new thing to be able to recognize the blockbusters, basically. So, cinematic and box office achievement.
Where do we sit on that? Where do we sit on the blockbusters? I mean, like,
it seems like. So, I'll run you through the films.
Yeah.
So you had Barbie, yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, John yeah. Wick Chapter 4, Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oppenheimer, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, the Super Mario Brothers movie, and Taylor Swift, the Eras Tour. Or if that's how you pronounce it.
And they picked Barbie over... Wow, okay.
I think it was a way of giving Barbie an award because it didn't win any other awards to recognize. I mean, look, it was the highest grossing movie yeah. of last year. So yeah, you have I'll to give it that. That. But it's about cinematic and box office achievements. So... in terms of, you know, you could argue John yeah. Wick 4 was fantastic. You could say that yeah. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was an achievement.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It was such a technical marvel. So it depends. That you can't just pick the highest grossing film each year because that'd be pointless. But
yeah, otherwise James Cameron will be on that podium.
Is James Cameron movie? Oh, okay, he's winning. Yeah.
We don't know what god you're praying to, James Cameron, but... like, how these Blue People movies are winning Oscars, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, depending... I think Way of the Water was nominated last year, wasn't it, for awards? So that's why it's not on this year. Because as right, I say, otherwise okay. that should have won it. So I think it was in the last...
so not winning Oscars, round. making bank at box office. You
that's
know.
It. I that's said, it.
You know what? Someone, so a friend of mine, I'm going to name and shame him on this podcast, but he's quite opinionated on the book face. But my friend Ez, I think I set him because there was news about Avatar going up to 7 and 8 or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, 6 and 7. And I'm like, what the hell? You want to? All right. If I believe if James wants to do it, James will do it, and no one can talk.
Well, he said, anything. I think he's got the ideas and plans for 6 and 7, yeah. but he might hand it off to somebody else.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, what's it up to 5 is written. Yeah, you know I mean,
yes,
so, and they're being made, so
that's locked.
So I turned around to him. I post that to him, just out of interest, and he was just like, "It's not like the last one made any money. Like I never heard of anything good about that one." I was like, "Yeah, right. mate, it's." I was like, "Mate, it was the third biggest grossing movie of the year, of all time."
He goes, "Yeah,"
and then he was like, "No, it isn't." Yes, it is. He was like, "What? I didn't even think that movie was all that." I was like, "I thought, you know what? I like that movie. I haven't seen it since because I know if I watch it at home, it'll be a diluted experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It won't look as good as how it did in the cinema because he built that in that scope and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, the CG looked fucking real, and it's because it's because they take the time and the effort to." It's not a rush job. It's not an Aquaman job. You know what I mean? No. It's like
Cameron will push that movie back until it's ready.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I don't care about your deadlines. I want to get this right.
Yeah, that's right. And it shows. It actually shows. I mean, you know what? I watch clips of Terminator 2 a lot, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like still to this day it holds up. And
to
still,
this day. To
still,
this day.
There are shots in that movie that are just mind-blowing if you just stop and think, how the hell did they accomplish that? Like, when they shoot the T-1000 in the head and it, like, explodes and it goes... You got to understand, this was, like, before real CGI.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it was just mad. It was just mad.
It's phenomenal. It's in my top 10 films of all time, easily. All right, I'm just going to go through the quick TV show winners. So, best stand-up... we had Ricky Gervais for Armageddon. Best TV drama, we had Succession. I've watched the first series, very good. Still need to watch the rest. Best TV series, musical or comedy, the winner, The Bear. One of the best shows I've seen in the last few years. Absolutely phenomenal. It's not a musical or comedy. It's not really a comedy. It's a very dark comedy, but it's more of a drama to me. But hey.
What's that
best
on?
Act, it's on Disney Plus.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The Bear, seriously, it is so, so good. Each season I've just binge watched. I think it's only like 6 to 8 episodes. It's not very long, but so good. So, so good. And then best actress in a TV series drama, we had Sarah Snook for Succession. Best actor for a drama, Kieran Culkin for Succession. So they cleaned up. Best actress in a TV series musical or comedy, we had Ayo Edebiri, which is from The Bear. Best actor in a musical comedy, Jeremy Allen White for The Bear. Then what else did we have? A best actress in a limited series, anthology, or TV movie, Ali Wong for Beef. Again, Beef is on Netflix. Really great series. A lot of fun with that. Very, very good. That's some real dark humor. That's fun. And then best actor in a limited series, anthology, or TV series was Steven Yeun, again, for Beef. So if there's two shows you're going to watch, Beef is only one season, it's like a limited series contained, and then watch The Bear. Then we had Elizabeth Debicki, who won Best Supporting for The Crown for her performance as Princess Diana, which I thought was very good. And then Matthew McFadden, again, the Succession. So they really cleared up. Right, so that's all about the awards. We're going to do a separate one on the Oscars. We're going to talk about all the nominations. We'll talk about our predictions. So like we did last year, we'll give our predictions, who we think will win and who we want to win. And then we'll do a scoring system on a follow-up episode. Right, let's talk about movie news. So let's talk about Supergirl, first of all. So Millie Alcock, the star of House of the Dragon, she's been cast as Supergirl in the new DCU. This is James Gunn's brand new DCU. The future Supergirl movie will be based off the Woman of Tomorrow comic. James Gunn has said, and I quote, "Millie is a fantastically talented young actor, and I'm incredibly excited about her being part of the DCU. Yes, I first became aware of her in House of the Dragon, but I was blown away by her varied auditions and screen tests for Supergirl. She embodies Kara as envisioned by Tom King, Blisk Evely, and Anya..." I'm not even going to pronounce that name. So, for the producers and comics. So, the fact that James Gunn has cast her has suggested to me that she's going to be appearing in the new Superman movie, which is currently in production, because otherwise you would have thought that would have sat with the director for the Supergirl movie. So, yeah. Thoughts on that casting, Sash?
Not seen her in anything. I haven't even seen the Game of, I haven't seen the Game of Thrones spinoff. All I can say is she looks the part, and that's about it. I just hope they got the best person for the job. But judging on the Superman casting, he hasn't got the key characters wrong in terms of my opinion of what a Superman should look like, what Lois Lane should look like, what Jimmy Olsen should look like. And you know what? I think his choice of Lex Luthor is the wild card and the interesting one, because he wouldn't have been on my list. But I do like Nicholas Holt. I've seen him. I've seen him grow up. And I think he's only now just catching that superstar status.
Yeah.
Which, you know what I mean? He's earned. You know what I mean? He's earned it. So I'm intrigued.
Did you watch him in the Menu?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, he was very
good. Seen him in the Menu. Look, I've seen... Look, dude, I watch Skins, bro. I've seen that kid grow up. No, forget Skins. I've seen About a Boy, all right? All right? I've been there from day one of my man's career, okay? Yeah. So man can act, okay? Man can act, but he's not... You know what I mean? Like, people are still like, who the hell is Nicholas Holt? It's like Beast from X-Men, bro.
Yeah,
you know
he's been around a long time now.
He's been a long time. He's been along so long, movie stars have had full careers, you know?
Yeah. So actors have come and gone.
Yeah, exactly. Actors, A-list actors have come and gone. Bruce Willis lost his mind. And you know what I mean? Like motherfuckers have gone to jail. So is that 20 years of experience?
Yeah, waiting for this. Yeah, I hope he really shines in it. And you know, and the great thing about this Lex Luthor, again, a lot of all these characters, they're going to be here for the DCU for a long time, the next 10 years. So you know, he's got bank for the next few years anyway. Okay, so let's move on to Fantastic Four. So it seems official that Pedro Pascal will play Reed Richards in the Marvel Studios Fantastic Four. And this is according to the SAG-AFTRA website. So this is the Screen Actors Guild American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. So this is why everybody went on strike the end of last year. So all the actors and stuff like that. This is the union that basically they're all a part of. They've posted on their website under him that he has been cast in this movie. So it seems like he is official. Mm. But nothing's obviously come from Marvel or anything like that. He wasn't on my list. Sash, how do you feel about Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards?
I've warmed up to him. He was never on my list.
No.
The Mandalorian,
I don't think he's probably on anyone's list.
The Mandalorian,
maybe because of his age, because he's like 51 now or something.
No, his age does not. Reed in the comics has always been an older guy. Him older and character. Ben True. Have always been older gentlemen. Okay. Mm-hmm. They've always been late 40s, early 50s, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. easily. And this Hence is why. yeah. And this is why. Like for years, even back when they were casting the OG Fantastic Four, my honest opinion, Bruce Willis would have made a sick Ben Grimm. I'm just saying, this is my dream casting. John McClane as Ben Grimm. Come on, man. You know that would have rocked, but there was no way Bruce Willis is like going to be like a bit, or maybe he would. I don't know. But that time
he's not
has
capable
gone.
Now, but
That time has come and gone. In terms of Reed Richards, to be quite honest, he wasn't there, but I've warmed up to it because I've seen him in a lot of other stuff. He's a great actor. Just shave the chash, man. Shave the mustache.
Yeah.
Sort out the hair and we're in. You know what I mean?
No, I think he can do it. Definitely. He's got the talent and there's nothing he's been in that I haven't liked. You know, he's just a really likable actor and a really likable person. So and you can see why Marvel would like that kind of caliber actor in their franchise.
It's also a case of, I guess, a lot of his roles doesn't scream Reed Richards. Mm-hmm. So for him, it's a challenge. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. For him, it's an acting challenge. So that's going to be real interesting to see how he navigates it. I hope he does well. Again, not my first choice, but at the same time, I've actually grown to accept it and be like, okay, cool with it. But I think the biggest thing people have is that everybody really wanted what's his face,
John Krasinski,
John, that guy. You know what I mean?
And you played him in Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange. And when he showed up in Doctor Strange, he slayed it. He slayed it. Mm-hmm. And I understand why people would and are disappointed. But I guess it builds on that multiverse narrative that Marvel have been pushing, that, you know, don't get attached to this iteration. No,
it could be anyone. Yeah. And to be honest, John Krasinski's at that point of his career now where he wants to direct more. You know, he wants to do his own stuff. And I just don't see he wanted to tie himself into such a franchise for so long. So for him, it's a case of COVID's around. I can make a fun cameo. It's a one-time thing and I'm done. So,
And you know what? I wonder if that was the actual conversation. That's what I wonder, because now that you've said it. But then, you know what? The other part of me being super fanboy is, why prick tease this like that, man? Seriously. Like, you either had Pedro from start or not at all. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, come on, man. Yeah. And plus, like, it also kind of like, you just want all these things to connect, like, fluently, but I'll get over it.
I suppose what it meant is they're doing it more now, because obviously you've got the Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. It shows that Peter Parker can be different, and I think it just delves into that more. But you say, it was number one fan casting, it happened, and it's like, take it away.
I mean, we'll see how it goes. Look, the best way to win people over is make a good film.
That's it.
I'll be honest, the
story
story is king, and Marvel have not delivered that. They have not delivered that, so they really need Fantastic Four. They really need it to be an all-rounder. They need it to be a win. You know what I mean? So good luck to them. I hope it's good. We'll see who else is cast as the four. So do you have any wishes for the rest of the cast, or?
I do. I think we've spoken about it previously, but we'll do another episode on that. We'll come back and recast that film. Because, with every few months, things change, So,
yeah, that's right.
So Disney came out with some announcements. So they've announced that Moana 2 will be hitting cinemas on the 27th of November this year. It was originally conceived as a follow-up series to the original movie, and it was assigned to Disney Animation Studios' Canadian Outpost, which apparently did such a good job, they're reshaping it into a film. So the official synopsis of the movie is, after receiving an unexpected call from her wayfinding ancestors, Moana must journey to the far seas of Oceania into dangerous long-lost waters for an adventure unlike anything she's ever faced. So Moana and Maui will be joined by a new cast of seafarers. So those two will be there. So Dwayne Johnson is coming back. He is going to be voicing Maui. But Lin-Manuel Miranda, who did all the music for the first one, he's not returning. But this is obviously Moana 2 is an addition to the live action version they're doing of Moana, in which Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, is coming back to do the live version of Maui as well. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is coming for the live version, because obviously all the original music was his. So there you go. Disney had a shareholders meeting this last week. So Bob Iger, he was on this call, and he talked about how it was a disappointing year at the box office for the House of Mouse, because pretty much everything underperformed. They didn't have a $1 billion movie, the Marvels, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, lots of flops in terms of box office. So he said, on the call, he said, I'd say we're leaning a little bit more into sequels and franchises. I think given the environment and given what it takes to get people out of their homes to see a film, leaning on franchises that are familiar is actually a smart thing. In our zeal to greatly increase volume, particularly tied to this, wanting to chase more global subs for our streaming platform, some of our studios lost a little focus. So the first step that we've taken is we've reduced volume, we've reduced output, particularly in Marvel. So, which is a good step. That's what Marvel needs to do. Okay. And also explains why, obviously, we're only getting one more of a movie this year, which is Deadpool 3, which is on July 26th. And everything else has been pushed back. Some of it is to do the writer's strike, but also is they need to get this stuff right. So Captain America Brave New World, that's February 2025. Fantastic Four is May 25. And Thunderbolts is July 25. With Blade, apparently, November 25. I think Mahershala Ali will probably be like 70 by then, but it's just like that movie has taken forever to make. But we'll see. So Eigner says that Marvel Studios will focus on its stronger franchises going forward, and he said, I'll leave it at that. So there's kind of this thought, are they going to return to some key characters? Are they going to try and bring some old characters back? Who knows? Will Deadpool fix the MCU? Because we know that Deadpool is probably going to be time traveling in the new movie. Is he going to reshape everything where Iron Man and Captain America and everybody comes back into the main fold? Who knows? For you Taylor Swift fans, her Eras tour, the concert movie is coming to Disney Plus on March 15th, so you'll be able to catch that. And it also announced release dates for its animated sequel. So they announced previously that they're going to be doing Zootropolis 2 and Toy Story 5 and Frozen 3. So we've had dates for those. So Zootropolis 2 or Zootopia, it was called in America, but they changed it to Zootropolis in other countries because of licensing issues, because there was already something else called that. That's November 2025. Toy Story 5 and Frozen 3 will be in 2026. What else have we got? So obviously the final big news from Disney was that The Mandalorian Grogu will release in 2026. So this is a feature film following up on the TV series. It's going to be directed by the creator, writer, and executive producer, Jon Favreau. So he is directing it. Favreau will produce alongside Kathleen Kennedy and Dave Filoni. Favreau said, I love telling stories set in the rich world that George Lucas created. The prospect of bringing the Mandalorian and his apprentice Grogu to the big screen is extremely exciting. So there hasn't been a Star Wars movie in theaters since 2019's episode 9. So it's going to be 2026 before we get the next one. But obviously Lucasfilm have announced other Star Wars movies and we'll probably do a Star Wars special at some point, but they've mentioned that James Mangold, who did Indiana Jones's latest movie, he's going to do one, and Filoni himself is going to be doing another one as well. So, and there's supposed to be this other one following Rey with Daisy Ridley, but it was on, then it was off, and now it might be back on again. I have no
idea. It wasn't mentioned in the shareholders call.
No, that wasn't. No. So I think that's been put on the back burner now. So Mandalorian and Grogu. Sash, is that something you want to see as a movie?
I don't care. I don't care about Disney. I don't care about Marvel, really. Mm-hmm. I don't care about Star Wars. I don't even care about DC. I know I've been bigging up David Corrin's sweat and whatnot, but mm-hmm. that's more a case of I love Superman, and it's like,
yeah,
okay, you guys have to impress me. That's it. Yeah. I'm not going to come in with hate with Superman, mm-hmm. with a new mm-hmm. Superman movie, but I'm mm-hmm. like, just impress me, make a good movie, mm-hmm. and then I will come. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I will come. I'm going to be the opening day regardless because it's a Superman movie. But if it's a great movie, I'm going to come with my friends and convince everyone mm-hmm. to come mm-hmm. see that every other day. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the difference between a good movie and a shit movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
because if it's a bad movie, yeah, I'm getting online and the whole world will know about it. So, you know,
we'll be on this podcast talking about it.
Everyone will know about it. So that's my stance on Superman. In terms of Star Wars, look, I'm look at my fucking wallpaper, okay? Like, look, I'm a big OG Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. I've never been so disinterested in Star Wars
mm-hmm.
in all of my life. Mm-hmm. Seriously, I don't care. I don't care mm-hmm. about Grogu and the Mandalorian anymore. I'm mm-hmm. sure. Look, the only saving grace is that Jon Favreau is directing it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? My problem with it is that, well, why aren't we having a series? So we're going for a 2-hour movie rather mm-hmm. than, you know, like an 8-episode series, which is about an hour apiece. So in the end, we're losing out.
Losing out.
You know what I mean? And I've got to wait till when? So how many seasons could I have potentially have had?
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand,
I'm wondering whether this released on that time because of Pedro Pascal's commitment to Fantastic Four.
Well, that was just He probably didn't have, for him, it's a voiceover now at this point.
Yeah. It is. And also, The Last of Us as well. Yeah, he's doing. And,
I think Pedro Pascal does have plenty of time. Because I don't think he's going to be in The Last of Us that much. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, okay, fine.
I don't think. Trust me when I say, mark my words if you don't know. Okay. For those that know, those that played the game, you know what I'm talking about. Okay. But with Pedro Pascal, look, here's the thing. It's like Mandalorian, it's a glorified voiceover role at this point. And then they'll do days filming. Yeah, I mean, hell, he could film the Marvel film on one of their blue screens and just like superimpose his face onto fucking that shit. Don't think they wouldn't do that. They would. And the thing is, like, I just, I just don't care for a movie. Like, I love The Mandalorian. I would have loved to have had a movie, but, you know, Star Wars in general has been diluted as fuck.
It's true. Dropped the ball. It's true.
Look, for a lot of people, some people would say, oh, Last Jedi was the one that killed it. You know what I mean? But Mandalorian, for a lot of people, it kind of was like, okay, they fucked the movies, but we've got this, and this is now
something new and good.
This is special. And then what they did at the end of season two was like the greatest Christmas gift anyone, any OG Star Wars fan could ever ask for. And then we got the averageness of Book of Boba Fett. It was very average. It had some great episodes.
Good moments,
Great moments, but what the fuck did they have to do with Boba Fett? You know what I mean? Like, they had nothing to do with Boba Fett.
The best part of that series was the Mandalorian episodes.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I'll give Boba Fett this. The first two episodes were great.
Yes,
because it was a good setup. Mm-hmm. And then the last, was it the two preceding, the three and four? Complete bollocks. And then we had the Mandalorian, and then we forgot it was a Boba Fett show with a very lukewarm ending. The ending was not good. It was a bit like, it's a mishmash. It was like a pot of like different ideas, and it felt like the script said, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then a Rancor comes, and then Cad Bane comes, and you know what I mean? Like, it just felt like someone went. Well, I know for a fact that. You know, because Favreau and Filoni weren't on that, you know, other people got involved and changed the script because the Boba Fett guy, sorry, Tamara Morrison has said so. He said that other writers got involved and changed it. And it does show.
It shows.
Ahsoka was okay. It was just okay. It should have been better than okay. And I love Dave Filoni, but it just goes to show you need Favreau. You know what I mean? You need Favreau. They're a team. They're a team. Yeah. Don't split them apart. Just let them do one thing at a time. Let them take the time and do it. Obi-Wan is the one that broke a lot of people.
Obi-Wan was the show. Series.
It was a terrible series. It was a terrible series. It had a good opening, but then it just, like, whatever. And this is just it. Like, they champion a Rey movie, like, before all of this Grogu and shit. It's a little too late. It's like, if they'd said that from the start, you know what I mean, and no Rey movie, people would have been like, fine, okay, fine, yeah, I'll give that a hit. You know what I mean? I'll give that a hit. I mean, Andor was okay, but, like, you know, people would have been given, but they mentioned the Rey movie, and they keep mentioning the Rey movie, and they keep, you know what I mean, you keep mentioning that era of Star Wars, people ain't going to care. There are going to be a percentage of people that do care. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's not like those films didn't make bank, and it's not like those...
No, there are some fans of those movies.
Yeah, there are. And there are legitimately some fans of those characters and stuff. But you're poking the bear. You're not... The thing The Mandalorian did, it gave us something new and fresh, and it was decent.
Yeah.
And they didn't cross-pollinate too much in that first season. Do you know what I mean? It was its own standalone thing, and it was fucking awesome. You know, and that's what Star Wars needs to be now. It needs to be new shit,
new content. You know what I mean? Absolutely,
new content, new shit, and just like, don't, you know what I mean, it needs to stop making the universe small. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And stop referencing fucking the sequel trilogy, because you know that's poking the bear. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it divided people so much. Why do your next spin-off as a spin-off of that? Do you know?
Because it
doesn't,
like,
make any sense.
It's like, why are you referencing a flop? You know what I mean? Like, some people could argue it made bank, and it did, but, you know, people didn't expect it to be that bad. So, but anyway, I digress, because I've gone on far too long on Star Wars. Marvel, I like what they're saying about scaling back. And then the refocus, it needed that. It needs that. It's too many shows.
Yeah.
I was speaking to a friend of mine in a pub last week, and they're not a movie fan, but they were following the MCU through up to Endgame, and they're a police officer, so they got other shit in life to do than watch like movies and stuff all the time. And now she's got a boyfriend and stuff, and he's not really an MCU guy. So she's kind of like out of the world. And then when she saw how much he has to look to catch up on, she's just like, okay, well, give this TV show a go. And she hated it. So now she's not watching it. And that's just your average, Joe.
Average viewer.
Joe that doesn't really care. You know what I mean? So if you're not selling it to the fans, you're clearly not selling it to a lot of the average Joes. So, you know.
They did. It was all for subscribers. They wanted to get people on their platform. And they're like, if we keep throwing Marvel content at them, it'll get more and more people on our platform. And it's like, again, it's not about how much we're getting. It's the quality. It's the stories. It's the characters. We want you to see that you care. You know, it's like you say, take your time. You know, the best series out there, the ones that cooked for a long time. You know, you don't need this rushed approach. And, you know, they're recognizing that, which is a good thing, like you say. So as long as, you know, a good sign of that is like Daredevil. You know, they looked at what they had and they were like, this is crap. We're going to start again. So they started reshooting, you know.
What was Echo like?
Echo was all right. It was quite good. But again, it's just kind of average, you know. I loved Kingpin in it, you know, great. But again, it was just okay, you know. But for a character you don't really know much about, it was quite decent. I like the fact that it tapped into sort of like that Native American heritage kind of stuff with it. But you could argue with her powers and stuff moving forward, she could be overpowered in the MCU. And I think just sometimes they don't think about that kind of thing. So the same thing they did with like the end of Invasion, Secret Invasion. You know, they got this person who's got like all the powers of all the heroes. It's like, well, now who can beat her? It seems silly. So, but again, it's where a lot of these series, the writers, they were kept separate from each other, didn't discuss the shows with each other. And I've been seeing loads of interviews recently of all these people coming out saying, yeah, didn't read the comics, don't know the comics, didn't know the content. We weren't allowed to talk to each other. And it just seems like a complete mess. So,
yeah, it shows.
It shows. Kevin Feige can't be involved with that much content, you know? So, yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on. So Jurassic Park or the Jurassic World franchise. So Universal announced a couple of weeks ago that Jurassic Park writer David Koepp had been hired to take the films in a new direction. Deadline had originally announced that Bullet Train Atomic Blonde director David Leitch was going to be directing it. But that has now changed. He's no longer directing it and they're searching for a new director. So, Jurassic Park, again, I'm done with it as a franchise. I mean, this one is going to be set with a new set of characters, but do you care anymore, Sasha?
No, I haven't cared since... the third movie, bro. Here's the thing. All right. One and done. It's a one and done movie. Jurassic Park, the OG. Mm-hmm. Where's the goat? Okay.
Yeah.
After that goat is eaten, after they leave that island, that's it. That's the franchise. That's the movie. Sure, they did the Lost World. And you know what? I like the Lost World.
Yeah, okay? I did.
However, it's not what lets it down. Is the last 20 minutes when they bring the dinosaur to the city. Before the gymnastic bullshit, it's a good movie. It's a solid 9 out of 10 movie, and then it just becomes a 7 all of a sudden. I think with that movie, going into a little bit of the making of that movie, very, very briefly, the original ending was supposed to be, you know, in Jurassic Park 3, they go and there's that flying
pterodactyls.
Pterodactyls. Okay, so there's the pterodactyl cage and pterodactyls. There's supposed to be a pterodactyl sequence. So that cage thing and whatnot was supposed to be in the second film. And then basically them leaving the island, they get on helicopters and it's supposed to be a helicopter chase against pterodactyls with a minigun on the helicopters and shit like that. And that was supposed to be the end action sequence for the Lost World. And that sounds amazing to me.
That sounds better. Right? Yeah.
That sounds a million times better. But, you know, what happened was they found out that a Godzilla film, Roland Emmerich's Godzilla, was being made. And then Steven Spielberg, in a very rare occasion, had one of his bad ideas because he was just like, oh, man, I love Godzilla. I can't believe someone's doing Godzilla before me. So then it became, let's try and beat them to the punch. You know what I mean? And the result was what we got. And I know, man, Spielberg, not your best work, bro. Not your best, not your best idea. But before that, very entertaining movie, very worthy sequel. And then the third one was shit. Lost World was entertaining. The first, it was a, you know, requel. Yeah, I mean, reboot, sequel. It was entertaining and I liked it. I enjoyed it for what it was. It's not better than the OG.
Yeah, but Jurassic World was good. Yeah, it was good for what it was. Yeah. But then, when it got to the Lost Kingdom and shit, then it was
Man, those last two films were bollocks. What the hell did the last film have to do with dinosaurs? I don't know. I know dinosaurs were in it, but that wasn't what the story was about.
It's just like, oh, let's get all the OG characters back and we'll make bank. It's like, nah, you need a story. You don't just bring people back for the sake of it.
It was terrible. So brings us to this film, and there was the announcement that David Leitch is directing. My first thought was, good. And that's not a smite on David Leitch. David Leitch has done some of the best action films in the past 10 years, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Deadpool, John Wick, Deadpool 2, John Wick 1, producer of all the John Wicks, Atomic Blonde, Hobbs and Shaw, the best Fast and Furious movie, in my opinion. What was it? Bullet Train. Yeah. Bullet Train's a masterpiece. That's great. His masterpiece, in my opinion. I love Bullet Train.
Yeah,
okay.
Great movie.
So that's five fire movies.
Yeah, and he's got the Fall Guy coming up with Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt.
I can't wait. I'm in for that. So you know what? Like, and you're telling me he's doing a Jurassic Park movie? One, it just doesn't smell like his wheelhouse. Second of all, I just feel like him doing a Jurassic Park movie is robbing me off a David Leitch movie. Does that make sense? It's like Quentin Tarantino wakes up and decides, hey, you know what, I want to do a Marvel movie. It's like, I want to see a real Quentin Tarantino movie. I feel like I'm robbed off one of those masterpieces. So,
well, the good news is instead of doing that, or maybe it was originally alongside, but he's getting nostalgic. So again, The Fall Guy, which he's got coming out this year, that's based on the 1980s Lee Majors TV series. Okay. So now he's gone back to the 1970s with his 1970s series Kung Fu, and he's doing a movie based on that with Donnie Yen.
I'm in. You know, the Kung Fu remake with Donnie Yen.
Yeah.
See, David Leitch doing David Leitch movies. That's all we want. That's a whole other discussion about. So that again, with Jurassic Park, it's a dead franchise. At this point, I'm going to say something even worse now. This is a worse idea. This is a worse idea. Universal, I know you want your Marvel cross-pollination. You may as well mix Fast and Furious with fucking Jurassic Park, because they're both garbage now. And it's about time, like, Fast and Furious met dinosaurs, right? They went to fucking space.
Well, you know, Don, he drives so fast, he ends up going back in time. You know, it's going to happen. There we go.
But no. Don't listen to me. That's a rubbish idea. It's a terrible, terrible idea. No, but this is what I want. This is what I want from Jurassic Park. I want Jurassic Park to stop, because we had one great movie in the 90s and a couple of okay ones. And just stop. Stop making these films. All right? Just stop it. Won't happen. That won't happen, but that's what I want. You know what they should do? You know what they should do? Someone should make a brand new dinosaur movie. I know Adam Driver tried, but let's do another dinosaur movie. Let's have cavemen versus dinosaurs. I know that's not historically accurate, but I'm sure there's like some comic book or something.
Like, what if?
some cavemen versus dinosaurs. Let's watch that all day. Let's see these cavemen take on the T-Rex or whatever. Be wicked. Or have like a guy go back in time and let's have
Predator versus dinosaurs.
Oh, all day. A Predator versus a T-Rex. I'd watch that.
Right. So talking of Predator, so we do have a new Predator movie that's been announced. The film Prey was really well received, and I thought it was a fantastic little reboot for the series. And Dan Trachtenberg, who directed it, he's going to be directing the new film. It's going to be called Badlands. It's not a sequel to Prey, but it's going to be a standalone thing, and it's going to be set sometime in the future. So maybe it's going to be post-apocalyptic. It's going to have a female lead like Prey. But yeah, I think this idea for Predator just being his own set films, just set in different time periods with different characters, is the way to go. We spoke about it before on this podcast. If you haven't done so already, make sure you check out the Creative Control episode, Predators, What Next? And we give all our opinions of what they could do with this franchise. And, we rock our idea, especially Sasha and Neil really fleshed out a really great story. And we added some stuff to it on the podcast, and it's a solid premise. And then, funnily enough, after Prey came out, people were like, oh, why don't you do this stuff with Samurai? It's like, we spoke about this the year before. So, yeah. He needs to listen to this podcast. That's what it's about. So, yeah. So, Predator versus Dinosaurs. Why not? You excited for a new Predator movie, Sash?
I'm always excited for a new Predator movie. Yeah. I don't know about it being set in the future, but, hey, they could do something different. Just don't make it as bad as The Predator. That has got to be a
cinematic. I've never actually watched that. Because of how bad you said it was, I didn't bother watching it.
Oh my gosh. It's so bad. It's like the worst.
Okay. Well, look, speaking of Predator, unfortunately, we had some sad news again in the last couple of weeks with actor Carl Weathers. He passed away at the age of 76. Obviously known for his role in Predator, but probably mainly as Apollo Creed in the Rocky franchise. And also recently in The Mandalorian. The likes of Stallone and Schwarzenegger have come out with wonderful messages about him. So just thank you, Carl. Appreciate you. Rest in peace. Right. So I'm going to blitz through some news here. So let's have a look. So we've got Sonic the Hedgehog 3 is going to be bringing back Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik. That's happening. I think that's a good thing. Jim Carrey is the best thing about those films. And we like seeing Jim Carrey being Jim Carrey. So, yeah. Off the back of that, we've also got a Knuckles TV series with Idris Elba coming back to voice him. And there's a trailer for that now, whether you've seen it or not. So that's a TV series spinoff. Sonic the Hedgehog, first movie, really enjoyed. Second was good, not as good as the first, but considering it's a video game based movie, pretty decent. We enjoyed them, haven't we, Sash?
Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. Okay, with Sonic, the first one was a mad surprise, and here's a secret. I worked at Sega during the time that the whole Sonic controversy went on. When they showed the first image,
the internet agreed on something.
No, I remember people arguing with me in WhatsApp groups saying, "Oh, he doesn't look that bad," and I was like,
"Wow,
no." I was like, "No." I'm not going to out anyone on here, but all I'm going to say is, you guys were wrong. And do you know how bad this thing was? Okay. They showed the trailer. Okay. I've got no NDA with Sega anymore. It's been years. But Sega of Japan, by what I understand, were not consulted about the new design. Right. Okay. So they didn't even know it was okayed. It was okayed by someone in the organization. Okay, because they ain't care, monies maybe. And a lot of people didn't even know there was like a movie coming out or whatnot. And when the design got leaked on the internet, I was in the QA team. Okay, and
they released the full trailer, didn't they? It wasn't a leak, they released the full trailer with
Leaks before. There was a few leaked pictures before on the internet.
Before the trailer,
Before the trailer. And before the trailer, and the trailer more or less confirmed everyone's worst fears. Right. But what happened was, when elite pictures came out, we all thought it was a joke. Mm-hmm. 200 people in that office thought it was a joke, and there's 400 people per shift. If you're going across shift, early shift, late shift, so there's a lot of people that just saw that and was like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And a lot of us were getting binned. We were all losing our jobs because, they were moving moving that department to Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. Look it up. There's a Bulgaria version of Sega, office of Sega. It's called the Sega Center of Excellence. Yes. And I'm not bullshitting, Google it. Sega Center of Excellence. What they're excellent at, I don't know. Yeah, so basically, these pictures get leaked. Eventually, not me, I didn't partake in this, but a lot of people were putting wanted posters of whatever ugly Sonic was. You know what I mean? there was a huge disagreement on that. And you know what that looks like to people, the higher ups upstairs. They're like, this is our mascot, blah, 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 stop. You know, emails going on, a bad example. But, you know, our manager was like, they're getting binned. They're all getting binned at the end of the year. You can't really threaten them because we got a lot of work. You know what I mean? And you're not going to hire anyone because, well, it's a temporary job for, you know what I mean? Like, like, allow it. So, yeah, there was a lot of that going on in that office, like, you know, people, like, slagging it off and whatnot. So people at Sega knew how bad it looked, okay? And then I'm just saying there were some people in my WhatsApp group just saying, oh, it doesn't look so bad. It's like, you don't play fucking video games, mate. You know what I mean? Like, shut up. You know what I mean? Like, that's a travesty. Yeah. And then when they did the redesign, everyone was like, phew. But that first movie is an example of people listening to the fans. It's a rare occasion when and okay, Sonic fanboys, I don't think that many of them listen to this podcast, but so there's a lot of Sonic fanboys that'd be like, no, they didn't look, you can't get everything. They did the best out of a bad situation on that first movie. Okay, and what they did, they did reshoots, they made Sonic look like Sonic, more importantly, and then they started putting Easter eggs from the games in that first movie. So it's like, okay, we're not doing that storyline in this movie, but we might reference it in the other. And then the great thing about the second movie was that more of the lore, like the Chaos Emeralds, and you had Labyrinth Zone in there, you had, you know what I mean, you had Robotnik's big giant robot from, that was the boss at Sonic the Hedgehog 2. You know what I mean? You had Knuckles and the Great Emerald, you know, working with Robotnik to get Double Cross. You know, you had all of that stuff from Sonic's 2 and 3 all up in that film. It was, for a fan, it was great. The only thing that let that movie down was the humans, you know, the wedding thing and the woman with the cat. It was a bit like, come on, man, we don't want this shit. We want Sonic doing this Sonic shit. You know what I mean? Like, we want Sonic. We want Jim Carrey being Jim Carrey.
And it's like Transformers, and they keep focusing on the humans. We don't care. Yeah. Just give us the Transformers. Yeah, give us Sonic.
Look, Jim Carrey is the star. He's the only human you need, really. You know what I mean? Like, with crazy weapons and stuff, and trying to kill him and have him have, like, I don't know, little robots and stuff, you know, trying to get Sonic and Tails. That's all people go to see those damn films for. We don't care about this woman's wedding. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, we don't care about that stuff. So, you know, just keep it simple. But the second movie, I thought, you know, leaned more into what the fans wanted. Hey, look, and the other thing was Robotnik, each movie starts looking more and more like Robotnik. So obviously,
definitely,
with the first movie, it was Hollywood doing, oh, this is proper, we got a big star, blah, blah, blah. And then Jim Carrey decided to lean into it. He's like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to grow the mustache this time. But this is the thing. At the end of Sonic 2, like during the press tours, he was saying, this is my last film, I'm retiring.
So
you know him coming back, man got paid. But here's what he said. He said, if he does do the third film, he's committing to a fat suit. So I just want to see him go full Botnik, man.
Yeah, full Botnik.
I want to see him go full Botnik in a fat suit, chewing it up.
Yeah,
being Jim Carrey, because I think the biggest thing about this movie for people that aren't into the games was that we got old school Ace Ventura back, because he hasn't been that guy in so
long.
For the longest time. And we live in an age where we don't really get that many good kids movies like this.
No. And we don't get that kind of comedic actor anymore either.
And that's, you know, on one hand, it's a Sonic film, it's totally like bullshit IP, but, you know, at the same time, those movies had a lot of fun, they knew what they were, and they made bank, good on them. I don't know how I feel about the Knuckles spinoff, to be honest, because it's like doing it without Jim Carrey, and it's like, I don't know what they're going to do there. I'll watch it. We'll see.
But again, it's content for Paramount, isn't it? So
The kids will like it, I guess.
I'm sure they will. Exactly. That might be a family show. Exactly, a family show. Right. So let's go through some of the other bits. So Tim Burton's coming to direct Attack of the 50-Foot Woman remake, with Gillian Flynn as scripting it. Also, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, or Beetlejuice 2. teaser poster was released with the release date of the 6th of September 2024. So we know that's coming out. Beverly Hills Cop Axel F, the fourth installment of the film franchise, is going to be on Netflix on the 3rd of July. And obviously, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon collaborated on Air last year. And they found some time now on a project to do a new project together on the kidnapping thriller Animals. So as with Air, Affleck will direct the film with Matt Damon starring. Little is known about the story, except it's a kidnapping narrative. Netflix has jumped on this one, so it's going to be a Netflix movie. Damon and Affleck are both producing the film, and they're supposed to be shooting potentially this year. But it's not sure if there's going to be a cinema release with this or not. Like, Air had a cinema, and then it was kind of on Prime quite quickly, or whether it might go straight to Netflix. So we'll see. Deadpool 3 is wrapped filming, so that's going to be, released July 26th. There's loads of stuff that leaks online about this movie. I've tried to stay away from most of it, but yeah, be aware if you're searching Deadpool 3 on X or Twitter. You might find lots of spoilers. But there will be potentially a trailer with the Super Bowl this weekend. So Sunday, Monday, or some point this weekend, we'll probably get the first teaser trailer. In terms of talking of trailers, make sure you check out the trailer for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Solid trailer. Looks very much like what a true Ghostbusters 3 movie would have looked like. I loved Afterlife, so really excited for this one. If about Imaginary Friends, got Ryan Reynolds, the voice of Steve Carell, plus Vince Vaughn. John Krasinski also stars in it and he directs it. Looks like a fun family movie. A Quiet Place Day One. I was very skeptical about this as a prequel to the John Krasinski movies, but the trailer was good. I was really sold on this. Very chilling. Lots of jump scares. Yeah, I'm excited for this one. But there'll also be A Quiet Place 3, so a sequel to those movies, but this one's a prequel set in the same universe. And also, besides the TV series we get for Knuckles, which is a sequel series, we're also getting a sequel series for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, so which was like my personal second favorite movie of last year. So we've got Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, will premiere this year. It's a similar art style to the movie, but it looks cheaper, it's more cost effective, so they've dumbed it down in terms of the quality. But it seems to have the same voice cast of the four turtles, which I think is really key to keep the dynamic. And yeah, it'll be fun to see those characters fleshed out over a series. So we'll see what that brings. And yeah, that's pretty much all the news wrapped up today up until like the 9th of February. There's probably a lot of content which I haven't covered, but we can only talk about Beverly so much. Hills Cop. Yeah, go for it, Sasha.
Can we talk about Beverly Hills Cop and Ghostbusters?
Yeah, let's talk.
Beverly Hills Cop. I've seen that trailer about 300 times.
Oh, really?
It is. You know what? You know what? Okay, so I'm gonna say this, yeah. All right, Beverly Hills Cop, like all three, yes, even the third film. I know it's bad, but you know, it's that
soft
one
spots. That's,
it's the worst out of the three, and I'm fully aware of it, especially after the banger that is number two, because two is just so good. Tony Scott just makes nothing but bangers. And and then I get it, three's the worst one, but you know what? I saw it's like Ghostbusters 2. Ghostbusters 2 is not Ghostbusters 1. Mm-hmm. But we were kids. We were at an age where we just wanted more. And yeah, we got more. Yeah. We enjoyed it. And yeah, we know it's bad. But then when I rewatch it, even though I know it's bad, there are bits in it which I genuinely laugh at. Like there's this bit, I don't know, I think I posted it in our WhatsApp group. There's this bit, and it shouldn't make you laugh, but it did. And it's very cartoony. It's literally, there's this train, model train. Axel Foley runs and it's got a low shot off the train for some reason, and he just jumps over the train. And two goons come and they knock over the train, and you just hear like if someone was in the train. It's so dumb, but yeah. It gets me. And then there's this one bit where he just hides behind a corpse and he's like, "You went up those stairs," and the guys go up the stairs. It's so dumb that you know what I mean? It's like, it's so dumb.
Yeah.
But it's like, if I had to, and this is really nitpicking. But here's the thing. All right, here's the thing. That trailer comes, and I'm not expecting greatness, but that was a good trailer. If you're going to do a trailer, that's how you do a good trailer. Okay?
It was a really good trailer. Yeah.
Had the nostalgia vibes. It brought back everything you loved about the character, the characters. I think Paul Reiser, a lot of people just didn't recognize him from being in the older films. And I think that, look, let's give Paul Reiser some credit, man, because, you know, I mean, Jeffrey, you know, I'm so glad he got a promotion. I'm so glad he's back. Yeah. More importantly, Serge is back now.
Serge, yeah.
So, all right, in art class in GCSE, my friend, I met this guy called D. Lancet Owl, who's one of my best friends for life, okay? But here's the other thing, all right? We had a mutual friend called Andrew Speakmaster, and Andrew Speakmaster's favorite film of all time is Beverly Hills Cop. And he'd always talk and do a Serge impression. And we'd laugh our ass off because Serge is funny with his lemon twists and stuff. And, you know, like, that was just it. It'd just be like, hello, I want... you know, hello, my name is Serge Lemon Twist, and you know what I mean, we just giggle like school kids do, whatever. So every time I see Serge in Beverly Hills Cop, I think of Andrew Speakmaster, and you know, I post that trailer up, and Speakmaster came out the woodworks and started posting Serge memes. And every time I post something, there's always like a Serge picture, and I'm just laughing my ass off. And you know what? We've agreed, me, Dee, and Andrew Speakmaster and my friend Navendu, we're going to reunite. We haven't seen Navendu in years, but we're going to reunite just for that if there's a cinema release. I know it's a Netflix movie, and it probably won't happen. But yeah. I just feel I need to sit with those four people, those four individuals.
Yeah, we have to get around someone's house and just watch it together, man.
Yeah, because
make it happen.
Mr. Fielding's art class. There was a lot of jokes over that film, man. And Serge being in it, that was great.
Because sometimes films can just be better with friends, and even if it's going to be a bad movie, watching it with friends would just make it fun. So definitely. It's funny because Eddie Murphy didn't want to wear the jacket, but the director insisted. He's like, yeah, I want it all. I want the jacket. I want the tash. He's like, I even want you to have the same hair. And he's Murphy's like, okay, I can do the jacket. There's no way I'm getting the hair the same. Like, I'm a lot older now, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's funny, but that was just iconic, and I'm like watching the trailer and I can't imagine him not in the jacket, like, do you know what I mean? So I think, you know, we've heard about like spin-offs, remakes, TV series of Beverly Hills Cop for years now, and we're actually finally getting something. So but I hope it's good, and you know, because we've got like Coming to America 2, which had some moments, but it was probably a bit of a disappointment. So we're just hoping now that this really delivers. So fingers crossed.
Ghostbusters Day.
Yes, Ghostbusters. And I purposely haven't watched the new second trailer because I know it reveals a lot more of the story. Yeah, well, either that, the international one, or the other one. The only one I've seen is the teaser one where it's about showing you the Frozen stuff. And so I haven't watched the new trailers because I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see this movie. I want to get excited. And I was afraid it might show too much. So I was just like, yeah, I'm going to avoid it. So
okay, without spoiling, I'm just saying this.
Yeah, no, chat, it's fine.
My most anticipated movie of the year.
Yeah.
Hands down. I loved Afterlife. Mm. Loved it. This trailer, it gave me some real Ghostbusters vibes.
Yeah.
Gave me some... Now, someone correct me in the comments. Is the villain a ghost from the real Ghostbusters? Because that's the buzz on the internet. So
there seems to be a bit of a crossover because they're referencing outfits that they wore in the real Ghostbusters. The tank, like storage tank thing, I think is from the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that's right.
There's in the trailer. Yeah. So there's lots of hints towards that, like they're making that canon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or they're just referencing it, I don't know. But So sound off in the comments. Let Sasha know. Is the villain from the real Ghostbusters in the new movie?
Yeah.
Or potentially at least. But I'll be there at the cinema with you for that one, day one, man. Because I remember the last one. I'm sure we watched Afterlife together, did we? Or were you in America?
I was in America.
You were in America, actually, yeah. America, yeah. But I remember I was there. And I was crying in the cinema, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Won't lie. Yeah. Okay. Well, that is really chat.
Andreas, you're wrong. Andreas.
Yeah, you're wrong, Andreas. I don't care.
You're wrong.
I love you, bro. But on this movie, you're just wrong.
Yep. You're wrong. 100% wrong. No doubt. He's going to message in the chat. But
that's fine. Bro. That's fine. We're here for it. I'll defend this movie. I don't care. Okay, that's it for movie chat. So, look, Sasha, it's been great talking to you, man, because we haven't done this in quite a while. So thank you so much for joining me today. Otherwise, I would have been on my Jack Jones doing this. So it was really good to hear your voice and have your input. So thank you. And thank you guys for listening. Really appreciate it, as always. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you haven't already done so, please make sure you hit that like and subscribe button on our YouTube channel. And you can hit that like and follow button or subscribe button even on some of the podcast platforms. So again, we're available on Spotify, Apple, Audible, Amazon, iHeart, CastBox, all of them, we're there. And yeah, so like I said, we're also branching out. So if you didn't catch the beginning episode, we're also doing a wrestling podcast now as well called The Squared Circle, where myself and Neil chat about wrestling. And we had on the show, we had Ryan, Raz and Az. They give their thoughts and we book the Elimination Chamber, which is coming for next month. So we'll catch up again, talk about the Elimination Chamber. We'll probably do a predictions episode before that. So once the card has actually been booked, we'll do a predictions episode. Then we'll do a follow-up with the results. And then we're going to start booking WrestleMania 1 and 2. And if you're a fan of wrestling, then you'll know that it's all kicked off with the press conference in Las Vegas, where you had The Rock slapping Cody Rhodes on stage. With Roman Reigns, it's all kicked off. It's cinema. And that's why we're expanding, because TV and wrestling can also be cinema. When it's good, it can be great. And I'm here for it all day. Heel Rock, Hollywood Rock, I'm here for it. I'm here for it. It's all going over Sasha's head. But if you want to join the podcast, Sasha, you're welcome. That's it. Sasha, did you have anything else you want to shout about before we head off?
No, I'm all good.
No? Okay, cool. Well, look. Thanks very much, everyone. We really appreciate you. And until next time, peace out.